You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today. Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests. Viewpoint.
You're listening to Viewpoint with me, Giles Brown. Talk Radio Europe's current affairs program with a discussion panel where we invite comments and the viewpoint of our listeners. 952-784-4000 is the phone number. Studio at talkradioeurope.com is the email, and the Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official. We also Twitter, we tweet. We are at TRE. Talk is good. And I think there's even an Instagram, believe it or not, out there somewhere in the social media ethos. Joining me in the studio, are Ron Yates and Rex Leyland, who defiantly doesn't tweet at all, and also live in the line from Miami, Nathan Thomas. I'm just going to look at the UK front pages today, just give us a theory before we're going to move on to the news that Theresa May has invoked, or is about to invoke, set the date for invoking Article 50. Just running through the papers in the UK, they obviously, a lot of them leading with that. The Guardian leads with FBI story. FBI chief confirms inquiry into Trump's Moscow connections. He's also got May sets date for Article 50 as EU warns of perils ahead. The FT, again, has got its main story. FBI confirms probe into possible Trump campaign Kremlin links. Again, a picture of Theresa May with May to launch Brexit talks on March 29th. The I save the date. Wednesday, 29th of March, the Prime Minister reveals when she will officially notify the European Union that Britain is going, invoking Article 50 next week, allows UK to begin 2 years of negotiations on Brexit. The Daily Express, March 29th, 2019, date set for our EU exit, also a picture of Nicole Kidman. The Daily Mail, Ron is smiling. Daily Mail, BBC's Brexit bias storm. A picture of Theresa May with PM in vogue. Theresa's £675 lesson in power dressing. Something the panel could probably learn from. The Daily Telegraph, BBC warned over Brexit bias. The same picture of Theresa May that appeared in Vogue. £675 worth of power dressing, apparently. The Daily Mirror, Russia's ultra-yobs infiltrated. This is talking about hooliganism ahead of the World Cup in Russia, which is next year, I believe. The Times, global brands shown at Google. And again, FBI confirms investigation into Trump links with Russia. And again, that picture of Theresa May in a blue power dress. The Sun leads on a sex change rapist in female jail. And The Star leads with Germany match shocker, fans fury as three Lions play in Scottish kit. Apparently the England away kit, this is association football, Rex, will be going to be playing in shock horror Scottish blue, apparently. So those are the UK headlines. Ron is obviously devastated by that news. But let's go back to the main news from the UK perspective. Theresa May has announced that she will begin negotiations to bring the UK out of the EU. She'll invoke Article 50 on the 29th of May. That's next Wednesday. Nathan, your thoughts, please.
Well, it's a step forward. I think there are a lot of people who sort of pay attention who are going to be very surprised when, come the 29th of May, they don't have any more answers to anything than they have right now, because I think people expect that's going to happen, and it's not. That's going to be a letter sent to sent to the EU, and doing some reading yesterday, it seems that it actually may be sometime in June before any actual negotiators sit down with each other and even start anything. So it certainly is a step toward something, but it's probably going to be a very small step, although, of course, right now it's the big headlines. She's going to do that, which is not a surprise. She said she was going to do that, and next week we'll get to it, and then we'll see what happens then.
She didn't choose to do it before, so it didn't clash with the current celebrations going on in around the EU's, what is it, anniversary?
60th anniversary of the Treaty of Rome.
Yeah, and I think that was quite thoughtful of her, and perhaps now obvious, but I think on March the 29th, as Nathan says, probably it's going to be a little bit of a hiatus. It's just the date is set. What's going to happen? Is it going to change our lives? No, we're going to have to still wait some considerable time to evaluate what the future lies for all of us.
We've got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
My name's Les, and I'm calling from Allera.
Yes, Les.
In your conversation, you said the 29th of May, essentially the 29th of March.
Sorry, my mistake there.
Yeah, and also, it's the biggest mistake anyone's ever made, but there you are. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks very much.
I've been to Allera. I've stayed in Allera.
Yes.
In Mallorca. Lovely place.
Okay. I think it might have been Allera, but I'm not sure.
Did you? Oh,
okay. The line was a bit bad. I presume he's referring to the Brexit pulling out, the announcement on me saying May, not
Nathan said May, actually.
Right. We have another caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello, it's John Dodd.
Good morning, John.
Good morning, panel. Well, at least I'm going to come to your rescue because you're all talking about the wrong things.
Okay, what should we be talking about then, John?
Well, let's put it this way. The World Service, the BBC, came out with a good one, but they put it on the back burner and they didn't repeat it, I think, after the next 3 hours or so. But what happened is they're talking about the poor black man and the fact that the whites down in around Johannesburg and all those places, the Veld, have got all the land and they have got nothing and never had anything. So what happened is the British government misguidedly put Mugabe into Zimbabwe.
What?
And the breadbasket of Africa, the most prosperous of all time. And the white people had the farms, but they also employed lots of black people, so children were being educated in very good manner. And when they put Mugabe in, he trashed the whole thing, kicked us all out.
So you're saying that you're commenting at the moment on a piece of news that you say was brushed over by the BBC. Is that what you're saying?
That's right, yes. And it's most important.
And it's obviously upsetting you terribly, isn't it?
Well, no. What's happened is what's going to happen in the future. I mean, Zimbabwe is an absolute basket case and has...
Right. Well, you should also be concerned about what's happening in Kenya. They murdered that lovely gentleman, was it 10 days ago, and already they're beginning to grab farms in Kenya. Do you know about that, for example?
No, thank you for putting me right. Yes, I agree with you. But the point is, the point is that many, many, many years ago, the white man mistakenly said that the black man is not ready to take over this country,
right?
Which we left them with the Bible and took all the land. But in actual fact, there are certain members that would be able to do it, but they'll never get any chance of owning a bit of land to grow anything. And the proof of the pudding is there are no black farmers in England, are they? And
I don't know where you get that from, John, but I'm cutting you off on that one because I'm not, going to have that. Right, take a short break.
TRE. Talk Radio Europe. Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Yes, the Viewpoint with me, Giles Brown. 952-78-4000 is the phone number. Studio at talkradioeurope.com is the email, and the Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official. Please keep your views. I'm happy to hear viewpoints, but you know, can we come from an informed point of view, please? Also, there's a group, this has crossed my radar, a group of 72 MPs have written to the BBC accusing it of being pessimistic and skewed in its Brexit coverage in the months since its vote on the EU. In a letter to the Director General, they said the BBC is unfairly representing Leave voters by focusing on those who regret their decision. The MPs are on the future of the BBC, quote, will be in doubt, unquote, if it's not seen as an impartial broker. The BBC said its job, in reply, was to scrutinise and analyse the Brexit issues. The letter was organised by Conservative MP Julian Knight, a former BBC journalist who backed Remain, but says that has not stopped him disagreeing with the stance of the coverage. It was signed by 60 other Tories, including Ian Duncan-Smith and Teresa Villars, two Conservative MPs, two Conservative peers, three Labour MPs, eight DUP MPs, and UKIP's only MP, Douglas Carswell, also added their names. The coverage of Brexit in the BBC, in fact, the whole Brexit issue is still a thorn, is still an emotive issue. Rex?
I would tend to agree with that. I think I'm getting a bit fed up with watching BBC News. When I'm at home in London, I tend to watch ITV. I think you get a much more balanced view. I've always been suspicious that there are too many lovey lefties running the BBC. And also they have a habit of bashing the NHS. When there's a chance, when there's the slightest little bit of bad news about the NHS, they're in there, you know, giving it a good whack, which I think is so unfair, and whipping up discontent, always whipping up discontent about the NHS. But I think the other thing that's giving me a bit of a concern is how they're bringing in the old guard. The old guard are coming in. We've had dreadful Blair on Andrew Marr on Sunday, telling us all what to do again. We've had Gordon Brown with his concerns up in Scotland. Maybe, as somebody said, he should have done more when he was Prime Minister. I think the old politicians should keep their opinions to themselves and not be too quick to try and manipulate the younger or the current politicians. That's my little opinion.
Nathan, over there in the States, has the decision of the UK to finally announce a date for triggering Brexit, has that actually, or even leaving the EU referendum, leaving the EU, has that garnered any coverage?
No, not really much. I mean, it's something that here people realize is going on, but it's kind of like what's taking so long is more the attitude. I mean, when something happens, there certainly will be reaction to it, but really, so far, not much has happened other than the vote, which was 9 months ago. And one question that I have is, do the British people 9 months after the vote have any clearer idea than they did on the day of the vote where they're headed in all of this?
Well, I think, I mean, there's been a lot of conversation about that. Perhaps my next caller can help me. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Well, hi, John from Los Bleachers.
Yes, John.
Just to say, I wonder if anybody picked up on Merkel's statement. She stressed strongly that she believed in a free trade and open markets. But I wonder how that compares to the Juncker in the EU. I mean, if it's free trade and markets that she wants, which seems to be exactly what Theresa May is talking about. So perhaps there is a chink in the EU armor, and perhaps the sovereign governments would take more upfront role in regard to negotiations. But if she strongly stresses that she wants to see free markets, free trade markets, and open trade, then she has a very good opportunity with the UK, which is one of the EU's best customers by a long way. Leave it at that.
Thank you. Rex, you want to come back on that?
Yes. Well, you just think of Volkswagen, BMW and Mercedes. Are they going to allow the EU to block the British market? I doubt it somehow.
And also, saying this, we've had Theresa May basically touring the UK. I mean, does she have a plan to sell the Article 50? Can she sell it, especially in Scotland? If she can't sell it to her own people, what chances does she have with the EU, Nathan?
Well, what does she have to sell is the question. I mean, the vote has happened. It's going to happen. It's gone through Parliament now, and everybody has agreed that, yes, she can invoke Article 50. But other than I'm going to invoke Article 50 and everybody wants the best for everybody in Britain, what do we know about what's going on? We don't, and I'm not surprised because the real talks have not started yet and won't for we don't know how long. It could be weeks. It could be, some are saying, longer before any official talks really start. And then it's a question of what are they going to be talking about? There's one set of people from the EU who say there's not going to be any negotiation about future relationship. It's going to be here's what is going to happen as you get out, and they will talk about that. But what happens as far as a trade deal or anything else afterwards will be dealt with after the UK is out. Now, whether that's really what's going to happen, again, nobody knows.
We've got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Sharon Alicante.
Morning,
everybody. Sharon. Morning. Why the BBC? Okay, they're being told by the Brexiteers, and they are pretty firm Brexiteers in all three of those parties mentioned. They're being bullied. They've bullied Theresa May right from the outset. They're being now telling the BBC what to put on. Yes, there is some bias with the BBC, but I find very often the BBC are biased towards the Brexiteers. Last week they went to Holland and tried to find people who are going to vote for Wilders, and they had a hell of a job. And look what happened. But why are they not also saying to the Daily Express and the Daily Mail and all those papers that virtually propagandized us, if you like, into vote in, propaganda a lot of the people whose propaganda pushed a lot of the people to vote out? Why are they not going to those newspapers and saying the same thing? Be a bit balanced in your presentation of the facts, because they certainly weren't before the referendum, and they're certainly not being now. Last week, just as Viewpoint was ending, somebody called in saying, there you are, the Express says Wilders, the Premier of Holland has given in and has accepted that Wilders is going to win the election. Not. So, you know, if you're going to tell the BBC what to do, why not tell the newspapers what to do as well? I just think there's a lot of imbalance in this. Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks for that, Sharon.
Cheers.
Sharon's right. I think particularly the Daily Mail, as we call it, the Daily Whale, if you want a little early morning depression, read the Daily Mail. It always makes you depressed.
They've got a particularly nice picture of Nicole Kidman on the front page this time around, so that's not too depressing indeed.
Ron
is going to come in.
It made my morning, that the front page.
The Nicole Kidman.
Yes, it did. That's Nicole there.
That's good to hear. But talking about all things to do with... I'm glad you're keeping up with the news. Talking about, the Daily Express had said that the far right was about to sweep the board in Holland. Let's get back to that story for a while, and the relationship with Turkey and the thorny issues of immigration, because up to last week it did look as if the far right, the populist parties, were about to sweep the board in Russia, in Holland, with the upcoming elections as well in France and Germany. A surge of populism has been going through Europe. Does the panel think that the Dutch election results has put a marker, has put a no more, no passaran sign to the rise of populist anti-immigrant policies in Europe? Nathan?
No, I don't think so. And just jumping back to for a second to the BBC, I mean, the one difference between the BBC and all of the commercial newspapers and so on, the BBC is not a commercial station. It is paid for by taxpayers. It is paid for, if you want to say, by the government. Not that it is necessarily or supposed to be a government mouthpiece, but there is a difference between the BBC and the commercial newspapers just in that that situation. Going on to the other issue, no, I don't think it. I think the nationalistic and so on rise that we've been seeing across much of the world is still there. I think the Dutch election just shows that just because you may be very loud and very strident in what you want and what you think you're going to get doesn't mean that there are that many people that agree with you. And I think because they are loud and they are organized and they do make a very forceful case for what they want, you know, we think they are in many places a lot more popular than they may be.
Your thoughts, panel in the studio, on the rise of populist policies throughout Europe?
Well, I think it's going to be quite interesting what will take place in France, which I think is the next one to have the elections. Holland was certainly a bit of a shock because everybody did feel that the right were going to sweep in. But again, politics today is so unpredictable, and basically whether Le Pen will get in is going to be a really big question mark. They reckon that she's got a very, very good chance of getting in. But populism is all back to the old protest vote, isn't it, really? It's, I suppose, trying to put a new regime in, something to sweep the floor clean, get rid of the old guard, let's get some fresh politicians or non-seasoned politicians in and get a different direction in government and how we're all being run. And I think that the Brexit was certainly the start of this seismic, political seismic change that's going on in the world. And it's going to be quite exciting for the rest of the coming months what's going to happen in the other countries. But on Turkey, I felt that it was what Erdogan was saying was towards the Dutch, I thought was unacceptable. That was really not, he should not have said what he said.
And we've got a call on the line. Good morning, calling you live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Dermot from Fangirl again. On the issue of this popular swing to the right in Europe, I would say you can expect to see a lot more of it, and you can expect that there will be a gradual shift to the right. And unfortunately, comes with it an anti-immigration policy. I mean, I lived and worked in Holland. I worked in places where Kurdish people, lovely people, got on great with them. The problem with the Muslim religion is it's like, say, the Catholic religion. It spreads across a large group of people from many countries, quite different cultural backgrounds. But unfortunately, when you get the Saudi Arabian government sponsoring Wahhabism, which is an extreme form of Muslim religion, and that's they own and control most of the mosques in Europe, and the mullahs are generally Wahhabists. When they're preaching to Moroccans or Algerians who feel disenfranchised in parts of Europe, then you're going to get all these kind of problems with gangs using crime and religion mixed in as a way to express their problems. And this creates the clash of the civilizations, which is exactly what the EU, which the communists controlled, plan to create the clash of civilizations. And they know that there's going to be a reaction to the right, and there's going to be a reaction from the Muslim people, and there's going to be many Muslims. I mean, there was a quote there I saw today. A Muslim woman was quoted as being a Nazi because she didn't agree with Sharia law.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so we need to protect both the Muslims who don't want any of this extreme form of Muslim Wahhabism to be protected. The communists are ensuring that it turns into no-go areas where the Muslims, some Muslims have said that they'd rather go back to their countries like Somalia or Syria than live in the jungle in Sweden or other parts of Europe because the police won't go into those areas, which is all part of the EU communist agenda to destroy Europe.
Right.
And
okay.
They're using Muslims as a tool. And the sooner we can help both the Muslims and the other people, the sooner we will start to see a shift away from the right.
Dermot, yeah, thanks for your points in there. Do you want to come back on any of those points, Nathan? And I want to bring Ron in as well on terms of our, what, you know, policies should be towards immigration and the Canadian experience as well in a little bit. But Nathan, any thoughts on those, any of those points raised?
Well, no, I mean, you know, the you know, our place is better and we're better without foreigners is something that is happening more and more all over the place, all over the world. In the countries where people are going to rather than the countries that they're leaving. And the numbers, as we've talked about before, are so large that they do and can have a major influence on the culture that they are moving into. And the people who are there, wherever it is, you know, are often not happy about this. And I mean, that I think is a very natural phenomenon. How far it goes and how it's dealt with is something that, that the world is struggling through at this point. But the reality is that cultures are shifting and cultures are going to change over time. It's how much do you fight it and how do you fight it? Or do you fight it and just accept that it's going to, that whatever culture you are in, if it is going to change and deal with it.
We've got another caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Kate Costablanca.
Morning, Kate.
Morning. Just puzzled that the person speaking before the last speaker, or the person calling in, didn't give any evidence at all for his amazing view that, that Russia is generating the extreme side of Islam. And I think he needs to, you know, really carefully rethink why he came to that conclusion.
Okay, and what are your conclusions on the subject?
With which one?
Well, the one that the what is your view then on the current situation that we have with, you know, with the rise of populism or the halt of populism in the EU?
I think the media is responsible for a very, very large amount of the problem. I mean, it creates stories. I mean, there have been two or three references to that already on the this morning. And I think going back to producing evidence for saying things should include go up to the the President of the United States as well. Like, he's not allowed to use his Twitter unless he can quote chapter and verse.
Okay. Thanks for your comments in there. Rex, want to come in on a comment on that?
I think that had the EU adopted a different approach to immigration, we may not be in the trouble that we're in now, as far as certain nations are concerned, and with their view on tighter border controls, etc., etc. I think that the EU probably handled this whole debacle rather badly, and they failed consistently to have a proper policy to deal with it. It was sort of a suck it and see attitude, and we've ended up now with all, as I said earlier, the seismic political change. It's all based on bad immigration management on the part of the EU.
Bad immigration management on the part of the EU. Maybe the other caller, this next caller, agrees or disagrees with that one. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning. It's Raymond from Mallorca again.
Yes, Raymond.
Well, didn't we start off talking about the Dutch election?
Yeah, well, we're an organic show here, Raymond, so who knows? When I throw the microphones open, who knows where we may end up?
Okay, just a quick one on the Dutch one to start with. Geert Wilders got 20 seats. He did better than last time. He got the second highest number of seats. This is alarming because the Dutch are traditionally known as very, very tolerant people, okay? Now then, he didn't win this time, but a lot can happen in the next 4 years, and a lot will happen in the next 4 years. The Dutch result will not affect France or Germany, and I strongly predict now Le Pen will not win the election in April. She will not. She'll have be a good performance, but she won't win. In Germany, the Alternative für Deutschland, the far-right party, they won't win either. In Germany, it will be the SPD, the Socialist Party. Martin Schulz is now the leader. They'll probably win in Germany. As I say, it'll take about 4 years. In 4 years, many things will happen, and none of them will be good. We've got Erdogan stirring things up very nicely. The Turks have lived in Germany since after the Second World War when they were first invited to come. They've lived, it's a parallel society, yes, there's a little bit of integration, but there's been no trouble with the Turks at all. My contacts in Germany, and as you know, I've said it before, I lived there for 14 years and I'm a German speaker. My German contacts tell me that there is a lot of support from Erdogan amongst Turks living in Germany. Now, Erdogan is very aggressive, very militant. He's a danger. He's virtually telling Turks to start an uprising. Of course, this will throw fuel onto the fire and give the far right even more support. And as I said last week as well, I think what we don't hear in our press, in European, in British press or even Spanish press, as far as I know, we don't hear about the day the incidents in these countries were, you know, a theft of women being assaulted and molested, these kind of things. Those are the kinds of things that push people, make people desperate and push them to vote in far right. But as I said, it's not going to happen now and it's not going to happen in 4 years' time probably. It'll take 8 years or 12 years before the far right start winning elections and then running the country. Okay. I think Erdogan here is a great danger with Erdogan. I don't know what does he want? Do he want to be the new Ataturk? He wants a new Ottoman Empire. Is that what he wants? But there's a danger here with him. I'll tell you what, and you may think this is crazy, but I don't think it is. The Greek islands running along the Turkish coast, it's a fact, there are very rich oil deposits in the seabeds around the islands. Erdogan knows, he knows now he's been very offensive to some European countries. He's found out he can do what he likes with the EU. He can say what he likes. He can do what he likes. He can also occupy those Greek islands. Perfect for him. He shows the Turks what a nationalist he is, what a strong man, how strong we are. Brussels will do absolutely nothing about that. They didn't help the Greeks, and they're not helping the Greeks to cope with refugees. The Greeks are poverty-stricken. They need help. They're getting on. They'll get no military assistance either.
What's happening in Cyprus? What's happening in Cyprus with the negotiations between the Turks and the Greeks? Do you know?
What's happening in Cyprus? Well, nothing's ever going to happen in Cyprus. You've got the northern part is Turkish, the southern part.
Yes, but they're having discussions, aren't they, at the moment?
There'll be no. They don't. I've lived in Greece as well. Yeah, they don't. I lived in Lesbos, which is very close to the Turkish coast. I did 3 summers there working. Right, and I learned a lot about the Greeks. The Greeks and the Turks. The Greeks can't stand the Turks. The Turks occupied Greece for about 200 years. They hate each other. The perfect solution for both those countries, and neither of them are rich, particularly the Greeks, if they could come together, do a joint venture and get the oil, yes? But they dislike each other so much, it's never going to happen. There will never be a unified Cyprus. It's not possible when you have two separate races who don't want to really integrate with each other. It'll stay as it is, northern parts Turkish, southern parts Greek. If Erdogan does make a move for some of the Greek islands, possibly he'll make a move for the southern part of Cyprus. And what this is the point. And we know this, that Brussels is very indecisive and very ineffective. Yes, they didn't help. They're not helping Italy or Greece with refugees. They talk. All they can do is say make hard comments about Brexit. That's all they do. They talk. By the time they finish talking, let's say Turkish troops land on the Greek islands or some of the islands, by the time they finish talking, it's all over. The Greeks have only got 12 million people, the Turks over 80. The Greeks have a small army, the Turks a big army. Greece is poor.
I think we should be concerned also with Erdogan's grab for this extra power. I think that's sent out a clear message of what his politics are about.
You're quite right, sir. This man is a dictator. Absolutely, he wants to be a president.
Regrettably, you are right.
He is but he won't. Ataturk was positive for Turkey. He did a lot for Turkey. He modernised Turkey, the European alphabet. Yeah, he did many, many things. He was also. He was secular Ataturk. He was not an extreme Muslim, if you like. He was not a radical. He was a Westerner in his approach. He did great things for Turkey. This Erdogan is destroying everything that Atatürk did.
Raymond, thank you for your comments in very passionate and very knowledgeable about the situation there. Nathan, have you any thoughts on what's happening with regards to Turkey and Europe at the moment and the latest developments?
No, I mean, again, some dire predictions there that, again, it's a matter of waiting and seeing. I mean, what Erdogan really wants. I mean, if he tries to expand Turkey's sphere of influence, if you will, I mean, again, then it will be a question of what does the EU do about it? And will they do anything? We have to wait and see. Immigration problems with refugees coming into Greece and other places. Yeah, the EU couldn't make up their mind what to do. I'm not sure that an invasion of EU territory would be as difficult a decision, but who knows?
We're going to have a look at what is perhaps the Canadian experience of immigration, because they threw their doors open to the current situation in Syria. Ron, you have personal experience of the situation.
Well, first of all, I'd just like to comment on the immigration problems that they have here in Europe. I mean, just an opinion of mine based on the things that I've seen and read is that I think that Europe was just absolutely overwhelmed with immigration and refugees coming across as a result of the Middle East wars and, you know, with Syria and all of the problems that were going on there. As far as immigration in Canada and us, the acceptance of the refugees that come over to Canada, my feeling is that the people that we brought in, that, I mean, they were vetted for a couple of years in the refugee camps in Syria. I mean, we basically knew who we were getting and when they were coming, and they were over and over through the United Nations and NATO and the Canadian government. These people were all interviewed, and we had some history on most of the people that came over. And these were people that came from war-torn countries. Their homes, their families were wiped out. There was nowhere to live. Like, I hear a comment often is, why don't the men stay there and fight? Well, what are they going to fight with? They have no weapons. They're fighting against armies. You know, you can't defend your wife and two kids in an apartment with a handgun or a bag full of rocks, you know, when they're firing mortars at you. So, you know, I'm very acceptable of the immigration. I'm happy that we did what we did in Canada, and we brought in those 35,000. I think we're up to 35,000 now from the Syrian refugee camps. There was some crap going on about everybody was in a panic, and the fear-mongering that goes on in social media and things like that really upsets me. I get really bothered by stuff that people put up there, and they really haven't got a clue what they're talking about. There's this outrage in Canada in this one area in Manitoba where I think there was 122 people over the course of the winter walked across the border from the United States and snuck into Canada. There's no fences, no walls. There's nothing there to stop them other than 30 below zero weather, you know. But people were like, all of the press got all over this. And you know, what that does is it just spreads fear and hate. And what are those 120 people? If we bring them in, let's give them a place to stay for a couple of months. Let's find out who they are, where they come from.
We don't often hear problems emanating from Canada with regards to to all these new immigrants, do we?
As far as I know, there hasn't been any from the people that we brought in last year.
So perhaps you have a model society that we could all learn from.
Well, I think one of the things is that everybody, there was stuff that went around on social media about all this money that the government was giving these people, and people put forms up on how much money they were getting, and it was all bull. I mean, they got a bit of money to start up, but most of the people that were brought in were sponsored by church groups and various other organizations in cities across Canada. They didn't all end up in Toronto in one subdivision. They spread them across the second largest
very
country
sensible
in the world.
You know? And we've got a couple of calls on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Morning, Charles. This is me. Good morning, you. It is Hans, presumably.
Hi, Charles. Hans from Kenya.
Yes, good morning.
Now, really respect, very, very, very wise man, very well spoken, the man from Canada. Unfortunately, I couldn't get his name because I'm driving through a bit of a rocky zone here.
That's Ron. That's our Ron.
Ron, how can you sit in this panel with this man, Rex? How can you sit with this populist, right-wing, EU-bashing man? I hear him on Talk Radio Europe since years now, this Brexiteer.
He buys me a coffee and a donut when the show's over.
Yes, that is the only way you could stand the man. I mean, I can't stand him anymore. He just said something so stupid again. I mean, first of all, he said,
What did I say that was so stupid?
Well, first of all, you said a shock that the right wing didn't win in Holland, which means a shock for you.
No, it was predicted. That was it. It was a shock, and it didn't happen.
No, it's a shock for you because you're a Farage fan, and you're a very right man.
I wouldn't have wanted Wilders to have won.
Oh, come
Holland.
On! And then you said the EU, of course, again and again.
The EU, yes,
is responsible for the immigration. The problem
it had no proper. A plan for immigration. You know that.
Just read a little bit through the history. Just see the problems in France. I mean, really, I don't know which media you're looking, but go through the story in France. This is problems of the second and third generations immigrants. This was before the EU. This is because France had a lot of colonies, and even after the Algerian war, then they took a lot of Northern Africans in, which are the troublemakers now. Okay? Then, again, in Holland, something similar passed. In Germany, the problems are often with second and third Turkish generations, which came in the 70s to work because they were needed, such as now they do need 700,000-800,000 a year to come in on the German labor market to be able to pay our pensions because, as you know, we are getting all older. And don't always mix up immigration with refugees because, as Ron said very well now, the refugee crisis from last year was very, very, very much responsible are the Americans and the British and your Saudis friends. Because everybody, wise people now keep saying there would not be even ISIS if the Americans since the 60s wouldn't have made troubles down there in the Far East. And you always were in the same boat with them and bombarded Iraq and bombarded Afghanistan. And now you don't want to take any refugees. How many refugees have you been taken so far? 4,000, 5,000 Syrians? How many has got Germany taken? Austria, 170,000 with 7 million people. And you guys always keep saying, oh, it's so small, we are just an island, blah, 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 blah. Your immigration fears now even lead it to Brexit. And you are one of them. Just make your homework next time before you start EU-bashing.
Yes, well, I will agree with you. There is a distinct difference between a refugee and an economic migrant. I think a lot of the press, a lot of people do get the two muddled up. And I think a genuine refugee should be allowed in. Economic migrants should not be allowed in.
Well, I'm with you. I'm not a lefty. I always elected conservative parties. But I think now it's very important that those parties in the middle and people with kind of a normal sense of life are not giving out to your righties and also not to the lefties, because then those whole Europe will end up in chaos. Everybody's just criticizing everything from the cucumber standards to the fishing quotas because most of the people talking about things have no clue about why it has been done. You're always talking about EU bureaucrats. I'm talking with Brits every day, maybe five or six of them, and everything is always bad, but most of the time they haven't got a clue why things have been decided, why our standards been implemented, and why we didn't give in, we as the EU didn't give in to Cameron when he said, look guys, this is going to get a bit dangerous, we could get out of the EU if you don't give me this compromise and those compromise and the other compromise. This is very simple, because we were 28 countries and we just could not always go down on our knees, because your Brits were special from the very first day.
Indeed.
Because you think you're a great Britain and you still live in great things, but there's not many great things left.
Apart from Great Yarmouth, obviously. Hans, thank you.
Guys, have a great day.
Thank you. I will. It's great, and it's great to hear.
Just correct you.
Rex. My
politics are slightly to the right of centre, only right. Very slightly.
We're going to take a short break and then back for the final 6 minutes or so of Viewpoint.
Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe with Giles Brown.
You're listening to Viewpoints. Excuse me, one second. You're listening to Viewpoint with me, Giles Brown, live from the studios at TRA, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain. Viewpoint, Talk Radio Europe's current affairs programme. If you want to get involved with the show, 952-784-4000 is the phone number. Studio at talkradioeurope.com is the email, the Facebook page, Talk Radio Europe official. Joined in the studio by Rex Leyland and Ron Yates, also dive on the line from the States, Nathan Thomas. I'm going to take a call on this line. We're into the last 4 minutes or so of the show. Good morning, cool. You're live on TRA. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Sharon Alicante. Hans, I totally agree with every single word that you said, and I just want you to know that some of us Brits don't think more like you than think the other way. But I'm also very embarrassed to be British, because we were going to take in 3,000 children. We take in 350 children, and then we close the scheme. How embarrassing is that? We're clearly not pulling our weight in any way, shape or form. I know we pay 2% of our GDP to NATO, but you know, this is another area. These are children we're talking about here, and I just think we're an absolute disgrace, and I am ashamed to be British. And I thank you, Hans, for making my point for me.
Thank you, Sharon, for that call. And Nathan, just goes to show that this is still a very much a hot potato in terms of emotional pull, this whole immigration issue.
Oh, definitely. And I mean, the one advantage that Canada or the United States has in this situation, of course, is Canada has, or the United States, has control over who, what refugees or migrants, however you want to define them, which ones they take. Nobody's going to jump in a small boat and end up on the shores of Canada or the U.S. I mean, you've got the Atlantic Ocean there. So as Ron said, they vetted all of these people before they came. They have a large country and can spread them out. And they had a plan for doing it with as he said, church groups, other local agencies who would sponsor a family or two families or whatever. And I mean, this is a system. The EU didn't have that choice and wasn't able to cope with them, and the EU didn't do what they didn't do anything. The people came and they just let them in. I mean, the one option that they had that they chose not to do for any number of reasons was hold them somewhere until they could be vetted and they could decide whether they were economic migrants or refugees. But nobody wanted to have refugee camps on their territory. The idea was, oh, well, they should be in other countries, you know, before they come here, which is a wonderful idea, but not very practical.
Indeed.
And so everybody just showed up because they could, and there was no plan. And for the, you know, couple of years that it went on in very large numbers, and it's still going on, it's not the focus anymore, but people are still coming. And as far as anyone knows, they are still just arriving in the boat, and there they are, and they can, you know, have the freedom to wander through Europe and go wherever they want.
Just want to try and squeeze in a quick caller before we come to the end of the show. Good morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Yeah, hello, it's Graham from Arroyo here.
Yes, Graham, good morning.
Yeah, I think Nathan's right, but the problem is that we should have had a closed border situation like Australia does as soon as we decided to have a National Health Service and all that.
Okay.
System, you get something out of it. And I would have liked to have heard of a viewpoint from Pompey Gary, because I think he would have come across quite well.
Indeed, as always. I'm sure that he'll be phoning in very, very soon indeed. I just want to go to the emails. We had quite a few emails in today. One from Cynthia saying, I'm protesting that I cut off John Dodd in the middle of his sentence. What happened to his own self-promotion, this is me, about everybody being able to express his, her opinion? Humbug. I will get back to you on that one, Cynthia, but not taking what I regard to as racist comments. David Willett came in. I have to say a large proportion of your callers today have their own views, I think is the best way to put it. And Glynis said not only BBC, but Tom Brady, who presents the ITV Evening News, is evidently a Bremainer and injects his own personal comments. Also out of time, almost out of time, it has been a pleasure and privilege to have your comments in today. My thanks to my guests on today's show in the States, Nathan Thomas. Nathan?
Always a pleasure.
And here live in the studio, Rex Leyland. It's always good to have you in the studio, Rex.
I adored it as always. Thank you.
And the nicest man on radio, perhaps in Europe at this precise moment in time, Ron. Yeah, Ron, thanks for joining us one more time.
I just want to thank you for another enjoyable morning. It was a lot of fun. Thank you, Giles.
Thanks very much for all your comments, as always. We'll be back with Viewpoint this time next week. This show will be going out again at 6 o'clock. Steve Ritson is up next.
Views expressed on Viewpoint by invited studio guests and callers do not constitute an opinion endorsed in any way by Talk Radio Europe SL.
Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.